This episode of Ticket Volume is brought to you by us, Invigate. Automatically discover, manage, configure, and report on your inventory of physical, virtual, and cloud assets with Invigate Insight. Get 1 free month of our software solution by going to try.invigate.com.
Ticket Volume is proud to present an experienced business leader with 10 years of management experience, ranging from retail to the financial industry, with 6 years of risk, governance, and vendor management. He got his start at GameStop before finding his way into Citibank to do vendor transformation and strategy projects, as well as program management. He did a short stint at Goldman Sachs before returning to Citi, where he is now the Senior Vice President and Global Head of Regulatory Portfolio Management. Welcome to Ticket Volume, where good service is good business. And we share news and information for improving IT experiences. I'm your host, Matt Barron, and each week I am so lucky to get to chat with different humans to share insights on service management, technology, and business. And this episode is going to be more of that goodness. I also hope that you'll connect, leave a comment, connect with our podcast, share our podcast with someone, get involved, help us improve. You're spending your time here. Let's make it the most valuable it can be. Now, though, let's begin. Welcome to Ticket Volume, Dr. Jordan Thurston.
Hey, Matt. Good to be here.
So glad to have you on the podcast. We've been talking about it for a little while. You've been working on some great projects, which we'll get into. And so I'm glad that it's finally happening.
Yes. No, I know. It's been over a year, I think, since we initially connected, and finally happy to see it coming to fruition.
Yeah. And what a great portfolio, or what a great resume you've got. Oh, my gosh. So many years at Citibank. And what a crazy, what do I want to say? Like, it's such a niche that you're in, you know? Regulatory portfolio specifically is such a strange pocket of IT. How do you describe it to people? How do you explain it to people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at the regulatory space, it's ever-changing. The landscape continues to adapt as more and more countries put out new regulations that piggyback off each other, kind of like your data privacy laws. And so regulatory portfolio management really is looking at your lines of businesses across a firm and ensuring that the decision makers or chief compliance officers, country officers, have the right level of insight into what's happening in their countries.
Okay.
And how they can stay compliant to any new laws, rules, or regulations that come up.
Okay. So like NIS2 comes out and you're like, okay, everyone in Europe, you need to pay attention to this, and here's why.
Correct. A good example of that too is around the GDPR space. When that came out, I think initially it was very vague, and then things started to adapt and shift. And from that spawned your CCPA within California. I believe Vietnam just came out with one last year as well. And so you're starting to see it shift and adapt, and understanding kind of where it is evolving from and who it's impacting is incredible to have that, those types of resources where you can then take it back to your senior leadership teams and say, hey, this is coming up. This is an emerging risk. How do we stay compliant?
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, to me anyway, because I'm a nerd. I don't think everyone would respond with all
that.
I'm glad
someone finds it. I'm glad someone finds it entertaining. I try to explain it to my wife and she's just like, I don't care.
Yeah, because I mean, it is dry, right? Compliance is dry. But it's so important. And what I like about that position and the way you describe it is kind of where the rubber hits the road. You know, NIS2 comes out. How do we actually put it into place? And I think it's one of the places where our industry is always led. It's led by that compliance. For instance, sustainability is like another one where you need to be compliant. It's different based on country, but, you know, it's how the company has to change. It's forcing the company to change, right?
Correct. And I think going back to what you just said too, where you said that compliance is dry, I think that's where I'm here to help change that mindset and push things forward. It's as dry as you make it.
Yes.
You can take that and apply it to any industry, but it's as dry as you make it. I think if you realize the amount of, not necessarily the power that you have, but the influence that you can drive by having this knowledge and understanding of the different laws, rules, and regulations that exist, but also how it ties back into your company's policies and standards, and just push it forward. I'm a huge governance nerd.
clearly. But I feel like we should get an amen already, right? Because you're right. You can make it exciting. You really can. Like, and the pace of change isn't going to change, right? You can change as fast as you can change. There's no changing that. But yeah, let's make it fun. Let's make it exciting. And I reached out to you because specifically we wanted to do a podcast about asset management. And asset management is very similar to regulatory and compliance management, because a lot of times what we're doing with asset management is trying to become compliant, either internal compliant by our made up boundaries that we put around assets, or they're externally compliant. We need to make sure that they, you know, don't get us in trouble. So tell me, how do you see those two things related between compliance and asset?
Yeah, I think if you look at it too, I mean, I'm sure there's laws and regulations on how someone manages hardware and software. I know like a big driving force is the FFIEC that does state this is how you have to have things stored. This is how you have your records retention policies and stuff like that you have to adhere to. So, I mean, I think there is a lot of similarity between the two, and just the same way that you would treat something that's coming out of a regulation, you should treat it the exact same way with your assets that you manage.
Okay, I get it. And then when you talk about regulatory portfolio, what does that mean exactly? Is it just a bunch of apps? What is it?
Yeah, it can be. I think it's different across every company. Mm-hmm. So it could be a culmination of apps. It could be just how you bucket regulations that come in by country. And that becomes a portfolio that someone or a group of people are responsible for maintaining and managing. And so I know my company has a vast system in place. I know other financial institutions have that as well. I know other non-financial institutions have something in place as well to help maintain and manage those regulations.
Yeah, because you want it to be manageable. You want your portfolio to be manageable. So talk about that a little bit. What do you do to make sure that you review that regularly, make sure that your portfolio doesn't get bloated or too lean? How do you do that exactly?
Yeah. Oh, and that's a great question. I think it's not something that I do on my own in my current role. I think it's a mixture of collaborating with the SMEs in the space, mm-hmm. but it's really looking at and fine-tuning of what is relevant to you and your country, or maybe not necessarily to you, but you as from a country perspective. What do you care about in Chile, in Malaysia, in Argentina, or even in Malaysia, Asia, anywhere there, you're able to kind of say, okay, this is what we need. This is where our lines of businesses focus on. And so that's where you fine tune to make sure that you don't have so much coming in that isn't applicable content for yourself, that you end up wasting time and perhaps even open a risk where you're missing a regulation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you need to review NIST too. Is it something that you actually need to be compliant with? It may not actually be. So don't, I've seen it happen before where people are like, oh, we need to be NIST 2 compliant. Or it was GDPR specifically. Oh, we need to be GDPR compliant. And then they come to find out they don't do business in Europe, you know? So don't waste your time. I think that's basically what you're trying to say, right? Like, just do what you
need. And I think from there, too, as you start to see more and more regulations pop up, there's going to be other countries that, quote unquote, will copycat that because they say, oh, we don't have that. And that's why I use GDPR as an example, because it came out and so many people are the same thing. We don't operate in the UK. Mm-hmm. We don't operate anywhere where that is relevant. But then you see this wave come over, and you have now all 50 states are looking at having some of their own form of data privacy. Mm-hmm. And then as a company, when you deal with the compliance and the risk piece, you have to ensure that every single state you are compliant and you're not breaching.
Wow. I just got a little sweaty when you said that. There's so much.
Not to scare anyone listening, but no, like that stuff is going to happen.
Yeah. We need to put a trigger warning at the beginning of this episode. But that's legit. I mean, each state is feeling like its own country now with some of these regulations that are changing. And Minnesota's always been a data open state to begin with. And so like, it's such a fascinating state to live in because all of the state-run applications and data, you can see all of the data. As a citizen, you have the right to see all of the data. And I just have an immense amount of respect for that, especially after seeing how other states manage some of their systems. So talk a little bit about asset management, because you said that you've had some experience with asset management. I'd love to hear, like, what sort of projects have you had in that space? What sort of programs have you gone through? What struggles have you led people through?
Yeah, and I think it hasn't been something that's been repetitive in nature in terms, like, several years ago, I was in charge of a software asset management kind of project where I didn't know what I was doing, so I had to learn very quickly how to do it, as most companies do. You just get tossed into the fire and you gotta survive. And so for us, it was really looking across at the cataloging inventory management, looking at the full life cycle. So where you had applications that were end of vendor support or end of life, and then how are we doing that? And I think a lot of the issues that stemmed from that were identifying that there was redundancy across several applications. And oftentimes at several companies that I've worked for, you have a free reign, so to speak, up to a certain point where if I want to use a vendor and you already have one that's doing the same thing, I can go ahead and do that because I have my own business justification. And I think that was something that I had raised up initially of saying, like, we have so much redundancy. There's lack of controls from a sourcing perspective. And I've encountered that at several companies that I've worked for, or I've gone in and spoken with them. So there was a lot of opportunity there. And that's kind of what got me thinking even more so from kind of that process improvement standpoint, is where you're really understanding of there's always going to be gaps. So oftentimes you have processes that were created for hardware and software asset management that have been in place for 10 years, yeah, 15 years, 20 years, mm-hmm, that haven't been touched. And you kind of fall into this bucket of people where, one, you know something is broken, but it's always the way it's been done.
Yeah.
And then you have the people that know, so like, they want to fix it, but they don't feel they have a voice and all that. So you're able to really take that step back and say, okay, based on the same way you would improve all these other processes, why don't you do that for this? There has to be more efficient ways to optimize the way that you're doing it. And so that's kind of what got me thinking of saying, all right, how do I, me, an individual in this, in a massive company, how do I challenge that status quo? How do I kind of raise that flag? And I think more people should do that as well.
Yeah, it's a luxury, right? And it's so fun when you get to that point, when you get to the point where you can actually have those conversations and have people grow and learn and actually provide value back. Because you don't think about it when you're buying. Because you just need a computer. You just need software. There's nothing you can do without those things. And so it's nice when, just like regulatory compliance, it can be as fun or as boring as you want it to be, you know? So how do we go beyond? Because asset management is good. It's a good place to start. Pull in your assets, understand what you've got for software, hardware, like you were talking about, application rationalization, and getting your portfolio in order, saying, you know, we're buying three CRMs at one time. Let's get one CRM and stop paying two extra vendors. But how do we go beyond just being compliant or just being efficient? What else do we need to discover and explore in that space?
Yeah, and if you look at the definition, and don't hold me to this, but my interpretation of what compliance is just adhering to the laws, rules, and regulations that are set forth by government entities, as well as your internal company's policies and standards. So when you think about that, going beyond that is more than just checking the box. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've met this. And like you may see it in companies where they have annual attestations. It's like, yeah, we did it. Get the rubber stamp, you move on. Life is good. But it's, how do you take that step forward and say, okay, we're going to do something because it's right, not because it's convenient? And that's kind of been the mantra that I've had with my team over the past several years, where I'm saying, I don't care if it's the easy thing to do. Do it because it's right, not because it's convenient. And getting in that mindset is going to help propel not only you forward, but your department, your company forward, especially when you're talking about compliance.
I love that. That's such good advice, because in the VUCA world where we've got volatility and uncertainty and compliant complexity and ambiguity, if you're doing what's right, you may be even future-proofing yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
That is such a good one. I love that tip, because especially in the IT space, you know, we follow good practice. We're always talking about good practice. How can we unify how other people are working with the way that we're working? But in reality, just doing what's right, what we know is right, or what we experiment and find out is right, gets us further, maybe even ahead of the curve. Okay, so let's get into the specifics. When you think about assets and life cycles, or even just like the portfolios and life cycles, what are the different life cycles? What are the different seasons? What are the parts that repeat themselves over? You know, say history repeats itself. What is that in asset management?
Yeah, I think it's the delineation between who manages the assets. I think some companies will have this cyclical view of every 2 to 3 years, someone at the top takes a step back and says, we have too many full-time employees, we need more vendors. And then you spend all that time and effort shifting over, and then another 2-3 years come back and someone says, well, we have too many vendors. And then it kind of goes back and forth. And I think in between those transition times, you may see a gap in process acknowledged transfers. And there has to be a kind of a framework developed that is foolproof of the different types of transitions from full-time to contractors, and how things are maintained and managed. Because I think sometimes, too, you have these other vendors that will come in and say, well, this is our proprietary way of doing it. And so when we leave, we're not going to, like, we'll teach you how to maintain it if you pay for our product, but we're not going to leave all of our cards on the table with how it's managed. So I think having companies set that parameter in place of saying, this is how it operates at a minimum level, and then just being able to build and take away from there.
Got it. Yeah. Because in an organization of massive complexity, you start to get a massive number of vendors. I think we've all been through.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, but also too, from a seasons perspective too, if you look at how often companies do tech refreshes. I think anytime you have a new person step in as a CTO or CIO, and depending on what company they came from, like, there's going to be change. And depending on how quickly that change happens, if someone comes in, they're here for 3 years and then they leave, suddenly you have a little bit of transition time with what's happening. But if it's maybe 6 months and they've already enacted this new process of how they roll out laptops, or they roll out like Zoom rooms and stuff like that, all that can be scrapped in a second. Then you have your assets that are now just laying there that you are accruing month over month or annually, however you do your accounting. And it just becomes a waste.
Yeah. Yep. When people come in with an idea of where we need to be and don't take the time to listen and acclimate, it causes a lot of disruption in that space. Or even when an executive just has a preferred vendor, sometimes that can cause just as much chaos as as not listening, right?
Story of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. If I had a dime for every time someone switched from Google to Microsoft and Microsoft to Google, man. Okay. So when you're thinking about these things, when you're thinking about processes, you've got a specific framework that you reference and use to grow and mature and improve processes. What do you call it? What is it?
Yeah, no, it's called the Dragonfly Construct. And this is where I get animated. This is where I get excited. So talking about process improvements. So I created this life cycle that compares the life cycle of a dragonfly to the first 6 months in a new position. And so when you overlay the two, it just fits perfectly. So it breaks down into the egg stage, the larva stage, and the adult stage. And so when you compare that, if you think the average length of time it takes for someone to understand their role, it takes about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you spread that apart with how individuals and managers drive strategic process improvement and change management, it kind of slows the immediate decision-making that new leaders may make when they come in mm-hmm. without understanding the interdependencies, without understanding where you fit in the organization. Even if you're coming in at the very top, you still are trying to find your purpose and where you fit, whether you're the CEO or one of the entry-level people coming in. Like, you have the ability to drive change. Mm-hmm. And change doesn't stem from a title. It stems from, kind of like I said before, doing what's right versus what's convenient, mm-hmm. understanding the layout, understanding where there's gaps. Because everyone listening, if you take a step back and look across where you work in your department, your wider team, your whole organization, you're going to identify at least at a minimum 5 to 10 gaps,
yeah.
if not more. But 5 to 10 gaps. And then it's, how do you take that and learn about it before you say, we don't need that, you'd shut it off and half a department falls apart. And it's having those right checks and balances in place as well. And then as part of that, it's taken off. It's something that I've been piloting with other companies and individuals to see how this Dragonfly construct can really help and work. And that also kind of leads into the book that I have written. I took all the commentary from people. I've taken the concepts. I redid a framework that fits with organizations. So this initially was meant for individuals and employer and managers, but now taking it a step further, saying as an organization, this is how you can implement it at the top layer down as a framework on how you drive process improvement across your organization. And that book is called Walk Among the Dragonflies, How Leaders Streamline Efficiencies Through Strategic Process Improvement. And that will be available June 25th. And more information, you can get that at evolvelikeadragonfly.com.
I love it. It's fantastic. It's exactly what we were talking about. Understanding that you're a larva, understanding that you're an egg, you're just a newbie, you're a new little baby in the space, and taking the time to acclimate yourself is going to make your adult life that much better, or whatever, you know, after the first 6 months of being
somewhere. Correct. No, and absolutely. And it's one of those things too, and I always joke about it, because I had someone say, like, oh, what happens after the 6 month period? I said, well, the dragonfly may die, but that doesn't mean your career does. It means you take it in the last part of the adult stage is taking it and mentoring and training people how to think in this mindset. And you can apply different concepts to that as well and build upon it to really make yourself the ultimate process improvement machine.
That's the goal, right? That is the goal, to be the ultimate process improvement machine, because that is where we find process maturity. That's where the business grows and individuals grow. So talk about that, because when I think about a dragonfly, I think larva stage, adult stage, and then death stage. What is the end? Do you just die and a bird eats you? Like, what in the metaphor, what is the end?
Well, hopefully not in real life. That'd be terrifying. But I think the metaphor there is that it just continues going. It becomes a cycle, a continuous cycle. So if you think of like Kaizen, continuous improvement. So this kind of takes elements from other methodologies and kind of solidifies it. Because I did a research thing across the board looking to see where this would fit. And I said, well, it doesn't really exist.
Hmm.
I haven't seen anything that compares life cycle of a dragonfly or anything to the first 6 months in a new job and the parallels that it has there. And so I said, okay, well, how do I scale this? Because it's just a concept. No one's going to care. And did a TEDx talk on it at the University of North Texas about 2 years ago, and it picked up, and it was just incredible. Because you always have that doubt of like, no one cares. Why am I doing this? And the whole purpose of it is just to make people's lives easier, and you can apply it not only to processes at work, but also if you think of a routine as a process in your own life, you can enhance the way you do your routines.
Yeah, it makes total sense to me, because it's not saying this is how you're going to do something. This isn't a framework that you're going to just apply. It's universal. You can take it and apply it to any process. You can even at the minuscule level, the procedures, or even, you know, you're building relationships with people, you know, be in that larva stage and you're taking an incident, you're taking a phone call, someone says, hey, this system is down. Remember that you're new to the world. Acclimate yourself, ask questions, live in the problem longer so that you can understand it better. That way, when you move on to that next phase, when you're on to fixing and improving, you've got the context and the understanding to do that in a good way instead of a destructive way.
Correct. I think a lot of things that I have seen and heard from other people too is when you have senior leaders coming in from other companies and they said, well, because I'm successful here with what I did, I can copy paste and have the same level of success. And you see it time and time again, things just don't work.
Yeah.
And they either realize it too late or they end up leaving because it's not working. And so being able to understand the why behind the processes before you make these large decisions can really help save time, effort, and just really the morale of the employees.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing with process improvement too, is like it can apply into any situation, any industry, any function. Specifically within the asset management space, it's really how do you take that step back and say, what is the overall objectives? How are we doing it today? And then how can we do it better tomorrow?
Awesome. Dude, such a great ending to a great episode. Dr. Jordan Thurston, how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about the Dragonfly process or just follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm available on all social media, Jordan Thurston or Jordan C. Thurston. LinkedIn's probably the easiest way to go. It's just LinkedIn/IN/Jordan C. Thurston.
And the webpage for the book again?
Yeah, it is going to be evolvelikeadragonfly.com.
I love that. Thank you, Jordan. Thanks for being on Ticket Volume, sir.
Thank you.
And to our audience, if you liked today's episode, register to catch all our news and latest episodes, as well as join a live podcast. Just go to invigate.com/ticket-volume or ticketvolume.com to get started. Thank you for listening to Ticket Volume. You can change and improve this podcast by DMing me or leaving a comment or just putting it on the internet. I'll probably see it. And speaking of Ticket Volume, did you know that this podcast is brought to you by Invigate? It's a fit-for-purpose service desk solution with integrated asset management designed to let you focus on supporting your organization without arduous implementations. In fact, IT teams from Toyota, NASA, and McDonald's use Invigate to manage requests, automate workflows, and centralize inventory data so that they can focus on delivering better service. Because good service is good business.